You're in Braves country.
All right, Braves country. That is my fault. I didn't have my mic turned on. Pop was down. Radio people know what that means. Turned it off last night when I was doing some studio work in Braves country. As the Braves win last night, they beat the Mets. We put the chat up. A lot of folks were having a good time in the chat. There were still a couple of people that just, I don't know what to say other than reading is fundamental. We pinned it at the top of the page. I even had it scrolling underneath of why we weren't doing the play-by-play last night. And still a couple of folks just, I guess, just boycotting reading or something. But anyways, we stepped aside for folks who couldn't figure it out. Most people could because it was all over the page. Because Chipper Jones, John Smoltz, Glavin, they were all in the booth together. And it seemed like everybody more wanted to kind of enjoy that, which is fair enough. I said at the time I wasn't going to be offended if everybody wanted to see that. It ended up, when we did a couple of polls, what ended up being the split was 60-40 wanting us to do the play-by-play, but we were looking for something more, much more along the lines of, you know, 75-80%. When it's that split, I mean, that is, at that point, we say, you know what, we're just going to step aside and let everyone enjoy that broadcast. Because the idea was that folks would be reacting to what they were saying. I listened to quite a bit of it. It's not really my cup of tea because I'm more into the game itself. I do plan on probably go back and listening to it later when I already know the outcome of the game. And at that point, I think of it more as a podcast. And I'll probably just listen to the audio, to be honest with you. But after seeing it the first time, honestly, it felt a little stale this time. It felt a little forced. I still enjoyed it as a Braves fan, per se. But I will say that I enjoyed it much more the first time around. Maybe because it was a better game had something to do with it, too. But they're not doing play-by-play. The only person who even attempted to try to do play-by-play for bits and pieces of the game was Tom Glavin. And kudos to him for actually trying to bring play-by-play. That's the problem when you have four color analysts standing in the booth, is that you don't have someone who's the meat and potatoes. It's a little odd that they don't do the meat and potatoes, but I guess they want, that's the way they want it, and fair enough. Honest Engine, if you're wanting to do it the way it should be done, they should have their play-by-play guy in the booth, and Frenchie should be odd man out. There's not enough room in a baseball broadcast, or do it like a damn podcast and drop it that way. That's what they ought to do. But if you're going to do it during a ball game, you see, I did not like the fact that when I was listening to it, I looked over several times and go, they're not even, because I was in my own world editing stuff and whatnot. And I kept looking over, I was like, they're not even giving you what's going on in the game. Because I heard at some point they said, okay, and we'll go to break. I was like, well, what the hell happened? I looked up and I had to rewind. So, like I said, not necessarily my cup of tea, but I enjoyed it per se, as far as I enjoy it much better after the game is over. I'll probably catch it this weekend in the morning. I'll listen to them talk. I probably listened to about an hour or so of it last night. And I think they were also trying they tried too hard to live up to the old expectations, because the pour the Larry a crown thing became iconic and put on people's t-shirts. I thought it was a pretty good line at the time, but you can't beat that one into the ground. Like, that kind of has to stand alone. And that was the only thing that I would say that kind of took away from it. But moving on from that, and the side of the fact that reading is fundamental, I guess that's just what the tagline is going to be for now on. When people are asking all these things, we've got it up in the chat on what's going on. I mean, we get people come in 5 minutes before game time, we're doing play-by-play, and it's all over the screen. It's everywhere. And goes, are you doing play-by-play tonight? Reading is fundamental. So there we go. All right, let's get into it. The Braves win last night, and I put up the overall standings. I'm done putting up the division standings. There's no reason to put the division standings up. And realistically, you could just put the National League standings. But if you look at your screen, you see the five teams that are in the mix, and they're not really in the mix. It's really four if you count the Braves. They're two of the three are in the American League. So what's the point of putting the National League standings? So right now, if the season ended today, the Atlanta Braves would be the number one seed. And that's really what I think they need to stay focused on. Keep them motivated, right? There's always things that you can slide back and forth on as far as it's going to keep you sharp. But the main thing, you got to have competition. You got to be motivated. It can't feel like an exhibition game. So we got a day off. Charlie Morton was impressive last night. Charlie Morton's been impressive his last three starts. The only thing that we'll have to put a pin on that is they've all been against New York baseball, and New York baseball is terrible this year. There's not a lot of years that you can say that across the board, but the Yankees and the Mets, they stink. But what I liked from Morton last night, other than the couple hit by pitches, and it continues to become an Achilles heel, and it's just one of those things that I guess he's just willing to live with. And I get that part of it, but I hate giving away free bases, especially when we talk about October. So the Braves will head into the San Francisco series, which we'll get into in a second, after a day off. All the pitchers, and I think this is key. Once again, Charlie Morton had an extra day of rest. I really do think that that is key, because when you look at this and you understand that him going into the next start, they're probably going to have Schuster pitch Sunday now. That's probably going to be a thing. Because in theory, if we were going down the stretch and we were fighting for a division, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, probably not. They'd probably skip a start. That's what most teams do when you get down the stretch. But when you consider the fact that, first of all, they have a pretty healthy lead in the overall, but the division standings, I mean, forget about it, right? So the division standings right now, I'm not going to put them on the screen, but just so folks know what's going on, we're 13.5 in front of Philadelphia. We are 18 in front of Miami, 24 in front of Washington. Or, I'm sorry, 24 in front of the Mets, 24.5 in front of Washington. Washington is going to catch and pass the Mets. If there's some kind of prop out there, bank it. The Mets are going to continue down this track of putting out bad baseball players, because that's all they've got at this point. It's not like they're not trying to win. Buck Showalter did everything in his power to try to win that series. And look, I'll tell you one thing. I'll give the Mets credit. They took game one. They took advantage of the fact that Wins was on the mound, but they took game one. Game two was a dogfight that we won 3-2. Game three was feeling that same way, where, look, game two and game three, it felt like we were dominating the game. And you kept looking up, you're like, my God, where's the run support? Come on, let's make some things happen. Let's get through this, right? Instead, you kept looking up, and what you were seeing was opportunity after opportunity, bad at bats. I think the heat is getting to him. In fact, Austin Riley post game, they asked him about what are you looking forward to in the road trip. And I think they were trying to get out of him, I can't wait for the Dodger series, blah, blah, blah. He said climate change. He was like, man, I'm ready to get the hell out of here. And fair enough, it's been brutally hot in the Southeast. I think you're going to see the bats come alive out there out west. Now, the Giants have good pitching, so it's not like they're just going to maul them. But I think you're going to see the bats come alive in San Francisco, Colorado, and then going into the Dodger series. That's going to be a fun one. I'll tell you something. If there's something you want to watch today, because I wanted to circle this. I know a lot of folks are like, God, what the hell do I watch? The break, you know, for a lot of us, me included, the Atlanta Braves become not just much must-watch TV to a lot of folks during the summer. They become a part of your daily routine. And when they don't play, it's almost weird. You're like, dude, what the hell? I don't get that same feeling in the fall because football's once a week. So when your football team's not playing, Sunday at 1 o'clock, Falcons are on, but what else do you want to do that day, right? I don't get that same feeling in the fall. Saturday, and I'm just using the Georgia teams as an example. Saturday, the Bulldogs are playing 6 p.m., but what do you want to do before then? What do you want to do after then? You really more base your day around probably going and watching it somewhere, having folks over, but what else can I get done? With the Braves baseball, it's every day. We don't have a game today. But if you want to see something, so they're playing the suspended game with the Dodgers and Guardians. Dodgers lead it 3-1. That game will start at noon. At the conclusion of that game, and there, what they're hoping is that it'll be done in time because they are in the, was it 3-1? I think it's not on the screen. I think it's the third inning. I'm almost positive I saw that. So what they're hoping is to get game two started around 3 o'clock. 3:10 first pitch is how it's being laid out. The second game, 3:10. If you want to keep an eye on something, even if you can't watch it, just box score. Gavin Williams, good young pitcher from Cleveland. Cleveland's slowly starting to fall out of the playoff race, but not the point of this. Gavin Williams is a good young pitcher. He'll be going up against that Dodger lineup, and I'll just be interested to see how they fare against Gavin Williams. But the other end of it, and this is the more important of it, Ryan Pepiot is coming back up. He's been recalled. He's getting the start. Now, he's only thrown 5 innings this year, and he had 5 strikeouts, 3 hits, and gave up 1 run. Pretty good. Pretty good. But last year, he had several outings. Pretty good. The reason why I bring this up is there is an outside chance we could face Ryan Pepiot at the tail end of the Dodgers series next week. Now, if they decide to push his start back, we might get him next Thursday. But if they go within line of what the Dodgers' schedule is lined up at, if you look at the entire schedule going forward leading to the Braves series, they will play. Today, obviously, the doubleheader. They've got 3 games in Boston. They have a 3-game set in Arizona. And then 4 games at home against the Braves. Now, they're going to return home to Arizona in August 28th. That's Monday. Everything, the effects of Hurricane Hillary should be okay. Everything should be good to go. By the way, I was thinking about this the other day. Can you imagine if they named that hurricane Hillary back in like the 2016 election year? First thing that came to my mind is like, my God, what are they doing? But the point of this is he would be set up to pitch today. He'll be set up to pitch Tuesday. This is all assuming that he's getting 4 days rest. And then that would fast forward it to the Sunday game. Right now, they're showing it as Kershaw versus Morton. But there's an opening on a couple of their slots because they didn't know where to put it. So I think there's a very good chance that everyone gets bumped up a day. And if you look at the tea leaves, the way it should play out, if Bobby Miller pitches on, I guess Bobby Miller's start wouldn't change, but if Miller starts right now, it's looking like we could end up with, and they could just slot him in to next Friday as well. That's another option they could have. Or once again, like I said, push Urias back. We're going to see Urias, Miller, Kershaw, three outstanding starting pitchers, and possibly this Pepio kid. It's way it lines up is that there's a good chance he's going to pitch. It could be Lance Lynn, but the way that it lines up right now, Lance Lynn would pitch Friday and Wednesday. So Pepio will probably pitch next Thursday and push Urias back, et cetera, et cetera. The Dodgers still have to figure out who's going to pitch on Sunday. They've had a couple of guys get hurt recently, Gonsolin being one of them. But my point is today, 3:05, if you're looking for something to watch, the Dodgers-Guardian game, I'm going to be tuned in because I want to see what kind of stuff he has. I've only seen his numbers. I've only seen him in the box score. I've never watched the man actually pitch. But rave reviews by everybody, so we'll see what he's got. If he gets banged around by the Guardians, I'm not going to be concerned about it as much because the Guardians' offense is one of the worst in baseball. But if he shuts them down, it's not going to necessarily alarm me, but your antennas come up a little bit. So we'll see how that plays out. And going forward from this, and maybe we might miss Kershaw. Who knows? I'm not as worried about facing Kershaw nowadays. There was a time where Kershaw would have been an Achilles heel for the Braves, but the Braves hit left-handed pitching big time now, which is advantage Atlanta. If you think about in October, let's say we get to the NLCS. Outside of Bobby Miller, they're two best pitchers right now. This is assuming Bueller isn't with them because Bueller still has a way to go to get there. He's starting his rehabs, but still, you're talking about it. Everything's got to go perfect. Urias, it's Kershaw and Urias as their two best starters at this point. Lance Lynn has pitched well. He's also pitched like Lance Lynn, so he's up, he's down. They go into a series. Everybody's healthy, everybody's rested. I'm assuming Clayton Kershaw is getting the ball in game one if it's laid out that way, right? Now, when we play him in the NLCS, it really comes down to how does it fall? Did he pitch in game seven? All that nonsense of the series before. But if they could set it up perfectly, I would think that they would want to go lefty-righty, right? So it would be Kershaw, probably Bobby Miller. He's got really good stuff. I know he's have a ton of experience. And then Urias. And then after that, probably Lance Lynn. They might go the route of put Lance Lynn at the two spot and have Miller pitch the four spot. I still think Walker Buehler is going to be more of a bullpen guy. I just don't think they're going to want to go out there and that. Now, could be wrong, but usually these guys with the Tommy John, when he got hurt last year, it was looking pretty certain he wouldn't even pitch this year. He's trying to come back, but what kind of role are they going to ask of him? I think he might be, at the most, an expanded bullpen guy. Expected to come out as like an opener, go through, but we're cutting you off at 50, 60 pitches each time. So that's just kind of a tiny peek ahead to the Dodgers series. As far as the series that we've got coming on, and I don't want to take anything away from what Charlie Morton did. Thought it was very impressive. I loved the fact, one of the things, if you noticed it during the game, they briefly touched on it, but then they would get back to everything else that had nothing to do with the game. But Charlie Morton was using his fastball more aggressively in the beginning of the game, deeper in the counts. And I can't remember who brought it up. It wasn't Smoltz. Smoltz reacted to it. So maybe it was Chipper. But the point is, I was saying the same damn thing on the pregame show. The same thing. If he would be more aggressive with that fastball, and throw him deeper into counts, he would keep everybody off balance because you'd start going in. Because, look, these teams, every single team, not just going into every series like against the Giants series and the Rockies and the Dodgers, et cetera, but when we get into the postseason, the scouting department's going to say, look, when he gets a two-strike lead, he normally goes to the breaking ball, the curveball. Down and away to rights, down and in to lefties. You could tell that the Mets had a game plan of if that curveball's near you, you let it hit you, son, because it's coming in at 70-something miles an hour. You're going to be fine, and we get a base. And if you think they're the New York Mets are doing that right now, when these games don't mean one thing to them, what do you think the Phillies are going to be doing? What do you think the Dodgers are going to be doing? Whoever we play in the postseason. And you'd be a damn fool not to. You can't stick your arm over the plate or leg over the plate, but today's umpires lack the ability to stand on what the actual rules are, which is means you're supposed to make an honest effort to get out of the way. They don't call that anymore. I remember the last time I saw some. The only time you'll see it called is if the guy was swinging and the ball hits him. Because then they have no choice that that is a strike. But you rarely see them call when the left-hander's sitting like this and he kind of nudges or kind of turns and nudges. There was a time back in the day, believe it or not, that would not happen. The umpires stand by the plate and go, ball. No, I'm headed to first. No, you're not, because you didn't try to get out of the way. It clearly states in the rule book, you have to make an effort to get out of the way. And they did that because years and years and years ago, that's exactly what they were doing there. Because you talk about someone trying to get on, take one for the team. That really came about before the power game was here, where most base hits were singles. So what the hell is the difference between getting hit by a pitch and slapping a single? That's where the mentality came from. So they put it in the rule book. If you don't make an effort to get out of the way, it's not a hit by a pitch. They don't call that anymore. So when you have a soft tosser like Charlie, I'm talking about his breaking pitches, they get comfortable and they go, you know what? If he comes inside, it's only going to be the curveball. He needs to bust that 97 in sometimes. Normally when he goes 97, he goes on the outer edge. But, man alive, just throw it, period. But if you go in and out, up and down with a 97, that is still, no matter what anybody tells you, sweeper, cutter, sinker, two-seam, whatever pitch you want to throw out there, the classic curve, the best pitch in baseball is and will always be a hard fastball. And even if you don't have a hard fastball, it is your fastball. That is your best pitch because it establishes everything else. Well, a couple of times last night, you saw Charlie Morton strike him out with the fastball. He did it to Big Boy, Shoney's Big Boy. What's his name? Vogelback. You could tell Shoney's was sitting on soft cheese. He blew it right by him. And Charlie, and this is what gets me about the whole damn thing. Been saying this for a while. Charlie acts like he's Greg Maddux throwing in the low 90s and has to be cute and outsmart everybody. My God, you got a 97-mile-an-hour fastball. That's not normal. Most humans don't have that. Use it. Use it. Make it happen. So he had 11 strikeouts last night, which was phenomenal. Great to see. But I'll be more impressed by that if he does it against the Dodgers. He probably misses the Dodgers in the Dodgers series, but there's a chance that it depends on how they want to lay it out. If they want to go where he pitches again on Tuesday, which is what it sounded like in the Snicker post game, then if they decide to go with the true five down the stretch, then he would face the Dodgers on Sunday. But I want to see him face the Dodgers. nothing against Charlie per se, but I want to see, will Charlie Morton go in and have a solid performance? I don't expect him to be dominant against the Dodgers. What are you, nuts? But I want to see if he can go in and have a solid performance against a Dodger team and see what their game plan is against us, against Charlie. So we put that aside. We head to the next series, the San Francisco Giants. Let's go. We're doing this one a little longer than normal because this will be a preview of the Giants series. So we'll go ahead and hit this one more time.
You're in Braves country.
All right. Braves and Giants. Get it. Looking forward to this series. Well, I'm not looking forward to the lack of sleep I'll get, but I'm looking for, these are great matchups. Great matchups. You saw how good Logan Webb was against us the other night. Well, it's going to be a rematch, Webb versus Strider. And Spencer Strider, great outings, the last few outings. You can pick some of it apart, but all in all, you got to give him a big thumbs up. By the way, I see this every day when I'm doing the prep and Strider comes up. He's a star. It is amazing to me that Spencer Strider brings it the way he brings it. He is listed at 6 foot. I don't think he's 6 foot. 195, I don't think he's 195. But let's just give him the benefit of the doubt. 6 foot, 195. I think he's more like 5'10", 5'11"-ish and sitting in the 185, 90 range. But to have that, and I know he's like all quad. That's why they call him the quad father. But my God, that is just unbelievable that he can bring it the way he brings it. So last time out against San Francisco, and this will be a good test because this is going to be a team that just saw him. What's it going to be like the second time around? Usually teams make big time adjustments. He went 7 innings. He went 10 strikeouts, 1 walk, threw 97 pitches. I really feel like that's his wheelhouse here. Keep him around 100. Don't send him back out if he's into the mid-90s for that next inning. If he's in the high 80s, low 90s, fair enough. Very low 90s. But he starts spitting the bit and running out of gas just past the century mark. And if you know there's no logical way the man's going to go out there and mow him down in 5 pitches, don't send him out there. We've been very, very, but we've almost bubble wrapped our bullpen at this point, right? That's okay. This is when you can start using it, start protecting your starters. But his last couple outings against the Giants and against the Mets, 14 innings pitched, total of 16 strikeouts, no earned runs. You love that. The one that was the most concerning was the really bad start. And I look, just sometimes you don't have it. He went 2 2/3, 6 earned runs at the Pirates, and that's the one that keeps you up at night. Before that in Boston, he pitched pretty well. Once again, they left him in too damn long. It shows 6 1/3 innings at 2 earned runs. They waited too long to pull him. Not putting that on Spencer. It was a good, solid start. The same thing can be said for the one against Arizona. They left him in too long. Ended up giving 4 earned runs, but they pull him with a couple of guys on base, et cetera, et cetera. Same thing with the White Sox. So what I see normally, other than that one outing in Pittsburgh, is that he should be looked upon as a 6-inning guy. He does not have a dominant third and fourth pitch yet. He's got a pretty good third pitch, but he's developing it. There are times where it looks phenomenal, that changeup. Holy cow. Sometimes you're like, God, could you bottle that? And then there's other times where it's nowhere near what it was. But he's literally living off that electric fastball, and you have to adjust to that, and here comes the slider. The changeup is just a change of pace, literally. All puns intended here on Braves Country. But until he perfects that changeup and then even develops, and we'll probably see it over the next season or so, develops a fourth pitch to really keep him guessing. And when Spencer Strider gets to the point where that fourth pitch is a go-to pitch, that man is going to be racking up Cy Young's assuming health. So that's your first matchup. And Logan Webb, once again, very good pitcher. He just didn't get a lot of run support. We talked about this the last time out. He just does not get a lot of run support. He's got a 3.36 ERA. I don't care what you look at a 1.09 whip. Those are the two most important numbers in baseball. You can do with the expected batting average, the WOBA, whatever the hell you want to point to. Those are still the two meat and potato best statistics, because it tells you how many runs he gives up legitimately and how many guys are on base, how many ducks are on the pond. When he went up against Atlanta last Saturday, they got to him, but it was the third time through the lineup. I was a little surprised they left him in, so I bet they don't this time. I bet he is pulled right about the fifth inning. I think I mentioned it at the broadcast at that time that they Spencer Stridered him. They left him in too long. The Braves got to him. But he went 8 2/3 against Texas, 5 2/3 against the Angels, 7 against Arizona, all in August. Gave up a total of 4 earned runs over 21 and a third innings. Pretty good. Pretty good. So that's going to be a hell of a matchup. It's a true toss-up because they are at home. Game two. What does game two look like? Well, we are expected to have Max Fried. And they're still up in the air on who they are pulling. Who they are expecting to have on the mound. I think there's a very good chance that it ends up being another possible bullpen type game. That's kind of the Giants' MO. They're not scared to put a bullpen game in. Max Fried will come in 4-1 with a 2.83. And we want to see Max Fried come back to be a little more dominant. He got knocked around against San Francisco. He really did. He gave up 5 2/3. Went 5 2/3, Gave up 3 earned runs. Now, if you remember, those earned runs were early in the game. He finally kind of settled down, and away we go. He went 6 innings, 2 earned versus the Yankees. But once again, he got banged around by Pittsburgh. Before that, he had the phenomenal start against the Cubs. That was his first start since coming off the IL. So I'm only going to use those 4 referenced, because you cannot go back to May, what he was doing in May and April. That would just be nonsense. So since he came off the IL, 21 2/3 innings, 9 earned runs with a 3.74 ERA, and he's got 20 strikeouts. Max Fried, when Max Fried is really rolling, it's much more of the Chicago Cub type series or outing than it is Pittsburgh and New York. What he did against the Giants is one of those, he gutted through it, he grinded through it. Still only gave up 3 earned runs. Did not factor in the decision. So if you remember, that was the game that Kirby Yates walked in the winning run. Kirby Yates walked a lot of people that anybody walked in the winning run. So What are we looking at here? Now, the one thing that I will say in Max's defense, he's only walked three in those 21 and two-thirds. And that's phenomenal. The hits allowed 26. That's concerning. That's the most concerning one. You're talking about giving up well over a hit an inning. Max Fried's supposed to be your ace. That's fine for a non-ace. He's supposed to be our ace. So come Saturday, what I'm going to be looking for is Max Fried to give us a dominant quality start. And what I mean by that is six innings, would even love seven, but let's keep it realistic. You know they're probably going to shove him out, back out there for the seventh inning. It's whether or not he can get through it. At that point, you're going on fumes. But let's say he goes the entire seven and gives up two runs or less. Max Fried's bar is a little higher than the rest of the guys. I'm sorry, but it's the way it is. When you have higher expectations need to be met, Max Fried, I'm wanting 6 to 7 innings, two earned runs or less. And if that doesn't put us in a position to win, then that's on the offense. Because it looks like we're going to be facing another bullpen game. If he goes out there and gives us two earned runs or less through six innings, and if they shove him back out there for the seventh, whatever the heck happens, I'm not counting that against him. I'm only going to count those. I'm only going to count the six innings. Because in today's game, I just feel like that they have lost their way on with the Braves. And this is, it might be the fact that, let's be honest, Snicker's a dinosaur. And he probably feels that same old, well, don't hurt you, gonna make you stronger mentality. That's not really true. We found that out the hard way. But if he shoves him back out there for the seventh, and look, I kind of get why he does it, because he's trying to get them ready for wanting to for them to grind in October. And I understand that part. But my reaction to it is, A, I don't love it, though I do understand it. But B, I don't hold against any of these pitchers anymore what happens in the seventh inning and beyond. Because at that point, it is the manager's. It's the manager's fault. The manager has to go, dude, can't send him back out there. He's on fumes. And the first sign of trouble, you should go grab him. It drives me bananas when they send a guy back out there for the seventh inning and they let him allow two base runners and then go get him. No, no, no. The first sign of uh-oh, go get him. You better have someone warming up in the pen. Better not have that same nonsense we had a few days ago, where it was very obvious that Kirby Yates was done. Kirby Yates was absolutely done. And they didn't go grab him with the lefty Jock Peterson coming to the plate. He was fortunate to get through those two strikeouts. But once again, you had Jock Peterson coming to the plate. They waited to put that bullet in the chamber at the last. You need to have someone else ready to rock and roll. Let's go. So I don't hold that against the pitchers in general. What they do 5 to 6 innings, yeah, that's on them. I can't expect Snicker to go up and go grab a starter, an established starter, whether he's an ace or not. I cannot expect him to go grab a starter in the third or fourth inning because he's just not looking good. You see people comment that all the time. Got to go get him. You don't have a 58-man bullpen. You can't just go get a guy. Sometimes that guy's going to, especially during the regular season, that guy's going to go take one for the team. Postseason's a little different. Not necessarily, but it's a little different. Give you a scenario. You're up 2-0 in a best-of-7 series. Your starter goes out there. I'll just pick, we'll say Charlie Morton because he was so good last night. We'll pick on him instead of low-hanging fruit. Charlie Morton goes out. He's in the third or fourth inning in a playoff game. We'll say third inning. And he's hit a couple of batters. He's put a couple of runs in. It's 4-1 opponent, whoever it may be. But you've got a 2-0 lead. And tomorrow, Max Fried is going to be on the mound. And game 5, Spencer Strider is going to be on the mound. Sometimes, dude's just going to have to get out there and get lit up. And he's going to have to try and grind. And he is your veteran. And he's going to have to eat those bullets. Because I don't want to wreck my bullpen for the rest of the series for one game. Because the key is to get the 4 W's. Or 3 if it's the DS. So, that's a scenario that I'm like, all right, I get it. Offense is going to have to try to bail them out. And if they don't bail them out, then fair enough. But tomorrow we'll be set up with Fried. We'll be set up with Strider. The following day, the bullpen will be rested. That's where a guy like Tonkin is going to be invaluable. Michael Tonkin better be on the playoff roster. When they start talking about Dylan Lee coming back and whatnot and who to send out, it better not be Tonkin. He is invaluable. We give out the postseason awards at the end of the year, and we'll do it again this year. But I'm telling you right now, Michael Tonkin, the way he's pitching, he is due for one of our awards. We do the award show. We actually do the award show before the postseason. We don't do it after. So, because we want it fresh on your mind on what's going on, then we'll do another one if the Braves make a run in the playoffs. But we give out the season awards before. So we look forward to that. But Tonkin, we only give out a few awards. And I'll tell you what, he's a leader in the clubhouse in one of the ones that I have in mind because we still got a long way to go. But man, that guy, Michael Tonkin could come into a playoff game in that scenario that I just gave you. And the Braves could be trailing 4-1. Then Charlie Morton finally gets out of that inning and then he gives up another run. It's 5-1. Finally, like, you know what? Screw it. Go get him. He got through almost four innings. There's one out in the third inning. There's two on, and we're trying to make sure we have a fighting chance. Tonkin, let's go. And Tonkin is the kind of guy that'll go out there and give you two or three solid innings and bridge that gap. Give your offense a fighting chance to get back. And if they don't, it's not the end of the world because you didn't burn Iglesias, you didn't burn Minter, you didn't use any of the other guys that you would normally bridge to get to those guys with a lead. Michael Tonkin is an unsung hero on this team. And most in your average fan, I know most of y'all would because most of y'all that tune into Braves Country are pretty sharp fans. I know we've got a couple of knuckleheads that come in, and some of them are trolls. But in general, I would say Braves Country fans, their baseball IQ is a little higher than what I see on other shows and what I see on social media routinely, because you actually watch the games. You actually know what the hell's going on. You don't just kind of go with the flow of what a lot of people like to call the Twitter mob, right? And the unsung heroes of this team, you got Tonkin, you know, it'll be easier to unpack this at the end of the year, but in the starting rotation, there's a couple that come to mind. Because you can't put the Charlie Morton, you can't put the Spencer Strider, you can't, because those are the guys that are well sung. They're sung throughout the lands, right? But what Tonkin does from the bullpen is unbelievable. I liked what Heller was doing. He just hit a snag. And, of course, at one point it would have been Jesse Chavez, but he's missed so much time. Forget about it. But we'll see what we get out of the Jared Schusters, maybe even A.J. Smith-Shawver, Sirocco, when we finally get past the September 15th date. But there have been some unsung heroes in the starting rotation. And then as far as out in the field, I mean, the first one that comes to mind, you got to go Orlando Arcia. Orlando Arcia was not sung at all going into the season. Now, it's a little different now, but we'll give those postseason awards out and always look forward to it. Regular season awards heading into the postseason. We usually do it like the day or two after. It depends on when the Braves series starts. But we'll do a Braves Country brunch show, and we'll do it on that, on the one leading into whatever series we get. All right. It's a long way to get to, but we're at game number three of this series. And remember, I don't think I mentioned the start times. Friday night, 10:10 first pitch. Saturday afternoon, it's 4:05. So it's a real quick turnaround. If you stay up for game one ball game with us on Friday night, which we are going to bring every single game of the Giant series to you, it's going to be a quick turnaround because we're going to play at 4. That got flexed a few weeks ago. 4:05. It's one of the reasons I had someone actually ask me why we're not doing an armchair quarterback kickoff show on this Saturday because college football technically starts. I was like, man, kiss my rear. I am not getting up. And because you see me come on about 10, I'm up at 7 getting ready for those shows. I am not getting up after being on the air till 1, maybe even 2 in the morning. And then have to do the show and then turn around and do the game again at 4. It's impossible. So 10:15, 4:05, and then Sunday, it's another odd start. They flex us to the Sunday night game. So I hate that. I really was hoping we would be the 4 o'clock game. I like those late 4 o'clock afternoon games on Sunday. I just do. Don't ask me why, I just do. It's one of my favorite time slots. I wish the Braves played more late afternoon games on Sundays. I know they never will. It doesn't make a lot of logistical sense. But I wish they would play more at home. I enjoy them. But it'll be 4 o'clock out in Giant Land out at Oracle Park. 7 o'clock Eastern, we'll have the game there. That one there, they have not named starters for either side. I'm going to go with the assumption that it's Jared Schuster because he got called up. Now, they could still send him down, and if they send him down, they can't see him for 10 days. I think it's more likely they go, all right, man, go see what you got. And if he stinks, they'll send him back down the next day and go grab someone else for the Rocky series. It seems more logical that they'll do that. It really does. Because I don't think they want Jared Schuster facing the Dodgers. So it would make much more logical to send Schuster down after Sunday, right? And then you would not need his slot for about a week or so. Because if you play it out in the way, and I'm just going off of what it's being projected right now. I know this is not necessarily in stone. But if you play it out in your head how this could work out. Let's say Schuster goes on Sunday. Once again, the Giants haven't announced their starting, and they'll probably wait till the last minute to do theirs as well. They've only got a few starters that stay regimented, and then after that they kind of bullpen stuff. It would be Elder on Monday, Morton on Tuesday, Strider on Wednesday. In theory, I think there's a good chance someone gets called up to pitch for Strider on Wednesday in Colorado. And then it's Strider on Thursday, Fried on Friday, Elder on Saturday. Sunday is Morton. If you don't do it that way, if you stay by with the way it's regimented, which the reason why I say I don't think it's going to be that way is that Snicker talks about the advantages of having the extra day of rest. Well, Morton and Elder will have the extra day of rest if they pitch Monday and Tuesday. He'd want to get an extra day of rest for Strider and Fried. So you put whoever it is in that slot. And oh, by the way, it would fit. It would fit. Technically, I believe Winans would actually be available to go. Or they could do an old-fashioned bullpen game and bring someone up. That's, let's be honest, will probably get DFA'd or sent back down eventually. So that Wednesday game in Colorado is going to be very, it's very interesting too. It's very strange. They're playing Colorado 8:40 all three games. Very odd. They normally play that last game, a getaway game, and I would have liked to have seen it at about like a 3:40, I think is what time the Rockies normally play, 3:40 Eastern. They have that weird thing where they start all on the 40s like we start on the 20s. So there is no getaway to get ready for the Dodger series. So, and it, as far as Kyle Wright goes, we're still looking at him, hopefully, somewhere around, I'm going to ballpark it just after September 10th, somewhere in that neighborhood. It really depends on how aggressive they are after the first rehab start in Rome on Thursday. Does he go again Tuesday or do they wait till Wednesday? You know, all that kind of stuff. So I'm thinking 3 to 4 starts and then he's back. But if he's not stretched out enough or he gets a snag, it could be 4 to 5 starts. But that's how this whole thing's going to play out. Is I believe they're going to push Strider's start back from Wednesday in Colorado to Thursday in LA. Unless their thought process is we don't want Strider facing the Dodgers because we're going to see them in about a month or so anyways, and we don't want the Dodgers to have anything, any book on them. I mean, that's what I hate about playing the Dodgers this late in the season, is we're going to face the Dodgers in all likelihood in the NLCS. And if that happens, they've just seen all our guys. So in that big picture of it, I wouldn't mind seeing them starting Strider on Wednesday. Heck, I wouldn't mind seeing them skipping the start for Fried. Just let them see Elder, Morton, and a couple of bozos that they call up that they DFA, and let's look at the big picture. But I seriously doubt that's the way that's going to play out. I'm going to go with the Braves do win this series in San Fran. You can't expect a sweep. I do think they get the Friday night game. I do think they get the Saturday game. I think the Sunday night game is going to be the tough one. Schuster, we'll see what he got. There's times where Schuster's looked phenomenal, and then there's other times where he looks like a guy that should be pitching down in double or triple A. And I have that, you know, Sunday night baseball, Schuster on the mound, if that's how it plays out. How many of y'all remember the Dylan Dodds start on Sunday Night Baseball where he just got shelled by San Diego? So that's still in my head. That was only a handful of months ago, right? So that's why I'm a little skeptical on the Sunday start. But we don't know who they're going to face, so it could just be a high-scoring shootout. You never know. But Strider and Fried, when they go on the mound against Logan Webb and probably a bullpen game, you should get those, but it is on the road. I said this before, and I'll say it again. I'll be happy with this road trip. if we end up with, we're playing 10 games. I will be ecstatic if we're 6-4. Anything above that is would just be unbelievable. I could live with 5-5. You'd suck it up if it was 4-6. You wouldn't love it, but you're like, thank God we're home. Now let's bring in the Cardinals and the Pirates. But I just, there have been times, there have been years where the Braves have been playing really good baseball, and they go on these long West Coast trips in late August, early September, and they turn into a disaster. I think it was 2012. I might have the year off by a year or so. But they went out west. I remember they played Seattle and San Diego, et cetera, et cetera. And they went on like a 9-game winning losing streak, and it knocked them out of the playoff picture. It was unbelievable. It might have been 2014. 2014, I think is when it was. But it was unbelievable. You're like, all right, we just got to go out there and hold our own. And we couldn't buy runs. The offense fell apart. Much different team nowadays. We didn't have all the strikeouts that are in the lineup back then with the Uptons and the Uglas and all that just putrid offense. But you just never know what's going to happen out west. Go west, young man. Go west. All right. That'll do it for us. We will see you at 3 o'clock. Today we're going to be talking about the Falcons. We'll probably dive into a little bit of baseball. I do have a couple of things I do want to get to, a couple of clips that I didn't want to put on the Braves show. But unbelievably stupid comments that I've heard in the world of football and one in New York radio. And then we'll be talking Falcons, Eagles, or Falcons Steelers, excuse me. And we got a couple other things on tap. Joey, Steven, Doug, all of them will be with me on 3 o'clock. Have a great day, y'all.
You're in Braves country.